Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium. Then to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. It is a Tuesday night, just a minute after the 8 o'clock hour here on the East Coast. Glad that you all could join us. Lots of stuff has been going on. Many of you know that the Black Talk Radio Network and the Black Talk Media Project is based in North Carolina. And we got some big news over the weekend here in North Carolina that has been garnering a lot of national attention. And that is the revelation that the majority owner, he owns 48% of the Carolina Panthers, but Jerry Richardson has been exposed as a sexual harasser and a racist. And I'm saying, should anybody be surprised at this? Now, the sexual harassment payouts that he made, now, I had no indication to know that this was a dirty old man and that he likes treating his female employees like they are there to perform for his sick pleasure. I had no clue. But in terms of racism, we're talking about an 80-year-old white male who has spent most of his life, other than the time that he was playing for the Baltimore Colts at the time, back in the beginning of the NFL, he spent most of his time in the South. He named it the Carolina Panthers because he wanted it not to represent Charlotte or even North Carolina by itself, but this whole region that we live in. And North Carolina is kind of known as the Southern Piedmont, but we're right next to South Carolina. And so he wanted, that's why it's called the Carolina Panthers. And anybody that knows the history of this man, where he made his money at, how he made his money, then you should not be shocked. You should not be surprised that he is being accused of using a racial slur towards a Afro-descendant person who worked in the organization. I think the guy was a scout or something. What a scout is, you know, they go to these college games and identify players that they may want to draft into the pros for their team. And so apparently an African-American scout was called a racial slur. We don't know what that racial slur was, but I'll give you one good guess of what that racial slur was. All right, if you're talking about an African-American, he could have called him something else, but I kind of think he probably said something that begins with the letter N. Okay, so I'm not surprised, but it's been a couple of interesting couple of days here in North Carolina listening to the number one Charlotte sports talk radio station and how they were beginning to cover it and how they were, I guess, putting together their programming because I know too, you know, how widely racism is practiced in this area. Now, we know racism is global and what have you, but I'm speaking more on a local level here. We know how these people practice racism. We know their history of racism. The Charlotte Observer, which is writing a lot about this, I call them sometimes the Jim Crow paper or record because it was the only major newspaper around here, and it was founded during Jim Crow. And of course, they gave the Jim Crow point of view. They definitely didn't get a point of view from a civil rights or human rights perspective of black people. I'm sure they did not give favorable coverage to Robert F. Williams and the Black Guard when they were in Monroe, North Carolina, which is just outside of Charlotte, on the other side of Charlotte from where I am. I'm sure they didn't give Mr. Williams and the Black Guard and that black community that were using weapons to defend themselves against the police and the Ku Klux Klan. I'm sure Charlotte Observer wasn't calling them heroes and freedom fighters and saying what they were doing was right. No. So this area right here that I live in actually has some of the oldest history going back to colonial days. I just discovered the other day that they had something called the Tryon Accords, where you had residents from this area sign this resolution condemning the oppression of the British and later raising a militia to fight in the American Revolution. That was signed right here in this area 11 months before the so-called Declaration of Independence. So it's a lot of history here. And I know a lot of that history, being, you know, born here and my ancestors, you know, going back so far on the very land that I'm sitting on right now. So I know a lot of history here in North Carolina, been paying attention for a very long time. And just the interesting coverage that we've been getting, I will be talking about that, but I will say that for the second part of the program. But during the first part of the program, I'm going to go over some of the news of the day that has been posted in our social media platform, btrcommunity.com. You can also get there by going to community.blacktalkradionetwork.com. It is a social media platform that was set up by the donors and of Black Talk Media Project, because we identified that we needed a safe space that kind of works similar to how Facebook works. But we don't have any Facebook jails. Nobody's comments are getting censored because everybody doesn't agree with them. It is a black digital safe space, and we set that up again with help from the donors to our North Carolina based U.S. based nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. So if you're looking to do something different, for example, now again, as a business, I understand we need to use these outlets. We need to leverage our enemy's resources or somebody else's resources so we don't have to use up our own. So I totally get why people use Twitter. I was one of the first ones to join Twitter. I understand why people use Facebook. I was one of the first crop of people to join Facebook. At the same time that all of these new networks were popping up was the same time that we was establishing Black Talk Radio Network. Okay, so, you know, BTR Community is a safe digital space for black people. All right, we don't discriminate because that would be against the law and we could get our nonprofit revoked and what have you, but not in a wink. It is a safe space for black people, and it also helps us to bring in financial revenue so that we can continue all of our media operations to the point that I hope one day we'll be able to expand our operations. So you can get a membership for just $24 a year. We understand that everybody's not in the best financial condition, and if you have to cancel that so it doesn't pull from your bank account next year, then you still will be a member of BTR Community. But for those that are able, we ask that you make those annual contributions so that we can continue to exercise our independence. Because I have to say, we got people out there saying that, you know, oh, I'm an independent media producer. Well, where's your platform? It's on YouTube. No, you're not an independent media producer, because you don't control the platform that you're publishing the media to. You don't control the distribution. Okay, so there, you're really a dependent. If I had to depend on YouTube in order for people to hear my voice, then guess what? I'm not independent. I'm not operating independently if I depend on outside platforms for people to hear my voice who may care about what I think about what's going on in the world today. So that is why we have established these platforms as safe digital spaces for our community. So join us over there. Of course, you can always make a donation of any amount to our nonprofit, Black Talk Media Project. You will see PayPal donation buttons on blacktalkradionetwork.com. You'll also see them on our organization's homepage, which is blacktalkmediaproject.org. And you make all amounts, everything. Hey, we welcome everything. We got people who are only able to give $2 a month. And guess what? They gave $2 more every month than some people. Okay? So don't think that your contribution is too small, because for all you know, you may be, in terms of what you're providing as opposed to what other people provide, hey, you just don't know how much more you're doing. All right? So we value all contributions and contributors. All right, so as I was saying, I wanted to get into some of the news of the day, and I don't know, you know, if y'all heard about this news from Twitter. I'm going to go to my Twitter page because I posted about it in btrcommunity.com, and then I took a screenshot of my post in btrcommunity.com and I sent it out to the other social networks, because we do have a lot of people that follow us on these various platforms. But our home, we at least we can say, if they shut us down, they can't take our voice away, because we have our own platforms. But I pinned this tweet on our Black Talk Radio Twitter account. That's twitter.com/Black Talk Radio or at Black Talk Radio. And Twitter announced, this was an article that came from the Globe and Mail, but Twitter announced that it was going to put warnings before swastikas and other hate images. So what do they mean by that? Well, sort of like how they're taking to doing on Facebook. You know, a lot of people share this police violence porn, is what I'll call it. And yes, we do need to raise awareness and what have you. But I tell you, I think it's some sick people out there who get off on seeing black bodies brutalized by slave catchers and whatnot. So I'm not so quick to share those videos and whatnot that have all this graphic violence and what have you. But Facebook has taken to, before the video starts, it'll actually give you the option to look at it or not, and give you a warning that graphic violence is ahead. So I imagine that is what Twitter is going to do. Hey, we got these white supremacists on the platform. We got these terrorists. We're not going to ban them, because we don't mind having these terrorists on our platform, but we are going to warn you when they put out their terroristic images and what have you. So I was like, wow. And I wrote this on my tweet that I pinned to Twitter. Not going to ban them. Just warn you that they have racist and fascist users. Check out btrcommunity.com. Say no to racism and fascism. All right. So I just thought that was pretty interesting, that you're acknowledging that you have these racists who are utilizing your platform to put out their racist propaganda and to organize with each other. And hey, you're not going to ban them, because apparently them being racist terrorists doesn't violate your, what they call that, terms of service. Well, let me just tell you, if you come to btrcommunity.com, we don't have like this big long page talking about terms of service and whatnot. I just basically put on there that your account may be denied or removed for security purposes. And so I'm letting you know now, if you think you're going to sneak in the BTR community, because I don't know what you look like or who you really are, you know, over the internet, and so it don't work like that, and you think you're going to come to our network causing trouble and posting racist stuff and you know, just engaging in virtual terrorism and whatnot. No, it's not going to happen. You're going to get booted. You're going to get banned. Hell, I have kicked programs off of Black Talk Radio Network because they were engaging in anti-blackness. Now, don't ask me why black people like to engage in anti-blackness. In their opinion, they're not engaging in anti-blackness, but it was clear to me that if you're telling people, black people, that they're stupid for calling themselves black or crayon colors, as you put it, then you're engaging in anti-blackness. Everybody has a right to self-identify however they want to identify. I don't go around telling people they stupid for identifying as a Moor or any as a Shriner or anything else. You know, I give people room to identify however they want to identify. And, you know, that term black is not, has not just been used here in the United States, but actually Stevie Biko talked about black consciousness, and he's a South African fully aware of more than we are over here of what tribe he's connected to in Africa and whatnot, what tribal people he belonged to. But we use the term black as a cultural signifier. It's also used as a political signifier. And we understand that that's not a nationality or anything like that. Malcolm X fully understood that. Huey Newton fully understood that when they created the Black Panther parties. And so let me just end that part by saying I don't engage in anti-blackness and I don't tolerate anti-blackness from anyone. And if I'm not going to tolerate it from black people, I'm certainly not going to tolerate it from non-black people. And so you got Twitter for that. You got Facebook for that, because, you know, we keep finding out that we got a bunch of racist terrorist groups on Facebook, and they may be hidden from you and me, but they ain't hidden from Mark Zuckerberg, are they? They know everything that's going on their platform, and yet they allow these racist terrorists to have a home on those platforms. So, again, I'm not telling anybody to boycott anything. I'm just reporting the news as it is. These are facts. These aren't my opinions. These are facts. And if you would like to support media that doesn't support terrorism and racism and slavery and all that, then join us at btrcommunity.com. All right, so the next story, all of these stories I have posted in btrcommunity.com. Now, we got this Florida official who is stepping down after telling black residents they were lucky to be brought over as slaves. And you know what's really sad about that? Because this is a white woman saying that, so I'm not shocked, I'm not surprised, just like I'm not shocked and surprised to find out Jerry Richardson may have called somebody a nigger. But he called somebody a race, he called an African American a racial slur. We don't know what racial slur he used, but we're going to take an educated guess. And so I'm not shocked and surprised that this white woman said something like this. A Florida community official who told black residents that they should feel lucky that their relatives were brought into the country as slaves has resigned. The Palm Beach Post reports that Cindy, Falco di Corrado, sounds Italian to me, okay, has stepped down from the Boynton Beach Volunteer Community Redevelopment Agency Advisory Board in the wake of racist comments she made during a debate on sanctuary cities. Residents flooded the city with complaints about Falco di Corrado after she allegedly told one resident to speak better English and then told black residents that they shall feel lucky we brought you over here as slaves, or else you be deported too. All right. So racism is as racism does. Okay. So it is no question. This isn't an allegation, but it's a fact that this woman is a racist. And then given that she's an Italian, she might only be second generation Italian. And I'm just reminded over the Thanksgiving holiday in this country, as I was doing some research and came across this speech that was shared by an African-American preacher in the 1800s who was talking about they bringing all these Europeans over here to take the jobs of the African-American who has been here for centuries now on this soil. Okay? That's why I laugh at these people, because they don't know history. They don't study. Do you know there's only 12%, and this was told to me, and I kind of accept it from the person. I don't see why they would lie about it, and it makes sense. But this person told me, when she found out a little bit of my family history, and that we do have an ancestor who had a couple of sons fight in the American Revolutionary War, but also signed them Tryon resolution papers I was talking about. And he was too old to be a soldier, but he helped supply North Carolina militias, which I will also point out, I found out that there were 400 at least that we know of that has been documented, 400 quote unquote, we couldn't call them African Americans because the United States didn't exist at the time, but we'll call them African colonists. There were 400 African colonists from this region of North Carolina that also fought in the American Revolution. So what I'm saying is, and this is true with a lot of people, not just people like this piece of racist trash, but there's a lot of people who thinks that every Afro-descended person on this continent got here by way of the transatlantic slave trade. Now, see, this is where I fell out with some of those other black people when they think that just because I'm calling myself black or whatever, or they were saying that, hey, the transatlantic slave trade is a hoax. Where the ships at? All they had to do was go to YouTube and look at videos. They be uncovering these ships that transported victims of slavery on the bottom of the ocean. They found some off the coast of Africa, off of Ghana. They found one off the coast of North Carolina one time. And so, I mean, come on, y'all. We're talking about ships that were made of wood. Don't think that wood lasts forever, but they have found the wrecks of these ships, and then you have all these records and transactions of human beings being trafficked, and the insurance companies putting insurance on them and whatnot. And so that's just ridiculous for anybody to believe, to me, in my opinion, that this is a hoax and they're just trying to trick you and all this and that. Okay, so I'm like, there's two extremes. There are people who believe that the slave trade never happened, the transatlantic slave trade, or I should say the transatlantic human trafficking trade, because I don't like using the dehumanizing term of calling people slaves, okay? So the transatlantic human trafficking trade, there's some, even black people, who don't believe that happened, all right? But we got a lot more of these second, maybe third generation European immigrants who just got off the boat on Ellis Island, coming over here talking about somebody ought to be thankful to be here. I mean, and somebody out there can correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like I remember this saying that's posted at Ellis Island: send us your pole, send us your tired and your weak. So they sent a bunch of pole, tired, weak white people over here to do what? To replace the labor of black people who had been here for centuries, because they did not want to share the wealth. They did not want to pay us for our labor in an equitable fashion. So what did they do? They undercut that labor. Just as these white people are saying that they bringing these Mexicans here so that they can undercut our labor. And don't get me wrong, I'm not on the side of no sanctuary cities, because I'm like, where the sanctuary cities for black people at? Huh? You know, you're going to say you're not going to cooperate with federal officials on undocumented immigrants in this country, but you're darn sure cooperating with them in the drug war to put black bodies in the prisons. So no, don't peg me for somebody who's sympathetic. I'm sympathetic to humanity. But on that issue, I do see how this cheap labor is hurting the black community. You just had this tree cutting service, the largest in the world, okay, just get a record fine for undocumented labor. And don't tell me that it wasn't no black peoples that didn't want to cut down trees or work in that job, because that's a doggone lie. But at the same time, these very white people, like this woman, telling somebody, you ought to be glad that we brought you here. Look, we were here before your parents came, or your grandparents, because as that person told me, only 12% of the population can actually trace their ancestors back to colonial time. These other white people, the majority of them came over here in waves, okay, during the 1800s as cheap labor. They telling you at LSI, send us your po. So yeah, they sent a bunch of po people over here and then gave them white privilege to where they can build wealth and shut black people out. So let's be honest about it. This is why I study history, because you're not going to tell me some crap and pull some wool over my eyes, because I know where I come from. I know this history of this country better than most. All right. So again, this woman, Falco de Corrado, more than likely just second or third generation Poe white immigrant from Europe, because remember, they call these Italians up there in New York City, they practice racism against them, you know. And what have you, because they're a little bit too dark, you know. Y'all got a little bit too much melanin than some of these other Europeans, and so we're going to treat y'all not as bad as these black folks, but we're going to treat y'all something similar, okay? All right, so again, this is the power of whiteness. This is the power of whiteness, that you can just tell lies and teach this alternative historical view that ain't based in no fact, without even taking into consideration your own family's beginnings in this country. So she got forced out. You know, Donald Trump got a lot of these people kind of bold and saying what's really on their mind. And that's why I'd rather had take a chance. And no, I did not vote for Donald Trump. I voted for Jill Stein. But this is why I would rather have a Donald Trump than a Hillary Clinton, because Hillary Clinton is more codified with her racism. You got to really study Hillary Clinton to see, and study her history to see what a racist monster she is. But Donald Trump, he wears it on his sleeve, man. He was definitely wearing it on his sleeve during the campaign. And I knew that he was going to embolden some folks. And then nobody could deny that racism still exists. And we don't live in some kind of post-racial America because of some black dude got elected CEO of USA Inc. No, that didn't prove nothing, okay? It just proved that, hell, y'all let some black criminals into your club to commit heinous crimes against humanity all over the world. So that's a story that comes to you from Raw Story. It was written by Brad Reed. Again, I have linked it up in btrcommunity.com. Oh, by the way, let me just say, I forgot to give out the telephone numbers. The telephone numbers are posted for you on the profile page, but if you're not on the profile page and you're listening via TuneIn or Streama or iTunes, any other outlets that we stream live to, the telephone number is 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. You can hit ** to put yourself in the caller's queue. I will see you come off mute and I will come to you. So y'all can jump in at any time as I share these stories. Don't worry about saying, you know, hey, I want to go back to that story you was talking about earlier. I got some thoughts on that. That's cool. Y'all can do that. All right. So the next story. Now, I was just having a conversation with someone about this, because this Me Too movement that's bringing out all of these women and a couple of men talking about sexual harassment on the job. But particularly, you got some feminist extremists out here who wants to think, or wants you to think, that women don't engage in sexual harassment, that women are not capable of raping people. And whether we're talking about statutory rape or rape by force or coercion, rape is rape. Let's not split hairs. Rape is rape. Let's just call it rape. Okay. And for some of those people that think that, hey, these women are primarily the victims, I would say wrong. Okay, I did a show with Dr. Tommy J. Curry. I shared some instances where I was sexually harassed on the job, and I didn't even share all of them. Some of them I'm kind of embarrassed to talk about, but, you know, it happens, and it happens to a lot of people. And I've had people who heard that show say to me, you're right, it happened to me as a male. You know, I had females want to try to rape me and stuff, cause, you know, whatever. And so they thought it was going to get them ahead if I went to bed with them. And when I said no, they act like they want to rape me and whatnot. So, you know, let's not forget that, as I told this other person, almost every day, if it's not every day, it's at least once a week, that we're getting a story of some teacher who has been caught sleeping, or should I say statutory raping, one of their students, one of these young teen boys. And then today a story comes out: husband catches Christian school teacher in bed with teen. There was another one that came out a week prior to that I was reading about. So there are no shortage of these stories of these women. Some of them are older women, like in their 50s, 40s, and 30s. Some of them are in their 20s, like this woman. And although I wouldn't call her a young person by any means, I mean, well, she's young compared to me, but this is a 29-year-old woman, married 29-year-old Christian school teacher, arrested after being caught in a bed with a teenager, a 15-year-old student, and this lasted for more than a year, and she was caught in the bed by her husband. I would say she might be lucky to get out of that situation alive, you know, because there have been men who have caught their spouses with somebody in the act, and they got off with temporary insanity. So she lucky to even be alive, you know. So Andrea Nicole Baber, 29, was arrested at her home in Cottage Grove, Oregon, on Friday. The Register Guard reported the arrest came days after Baber's husband allegedly walked in on her and a teen in bed, according to the news review. See, she didn't even have no respect for her husband at all. I mean, that's obvious if you're going to cheat on your spouse. But then to cheat on your spouse in your marital bed, that's taking it to a whole nother level of disrespect right there in this man's house, in his bed. And when I say that, I don't mean to imply that everything belonged to him. It probably is community property. I don't know whose name the house was in, but y'all know the gist of what I'm saying. He walked in on his wife in their bed with this little boy. The student's father reported the relationship to police December the 12th after he and his wife received an anonymous email asking if they knew the boy and the Logos Christian Academy teacher were in a sexual relationship. Let me guess. Let me see. The message was attached with photos of the teacher and the boy, according to the Register Guard, citing an affidavit filed in Douglas County Circuit Court. The teen told deputies that he and Baber had been in a relationship since 2017 when the boy was 15, according to the newspaper. Deputies said that she provided him with alcohol and weed. So not only is she statutory raping, since some of y'all want to make a distinction, not only was she statutory raping this 15-year-old, but she was plying him with alcohol and weed. So I'm saying, if we're going to have a conversation on sexual impropriety, on abuse of power, let's not make it a gender issue. Let's not just focus on white males. This is everyone. This affects everyone. And so anybody that is coming from a place where they're telling you that, hey, all black men participate in the rape culture, or all black men are killers and what, don't pay that person a time of day. Put them on mute, because they have an agenda and they are ignoring all of these sexual impropriety that is going on right in front of our faces. To me, it doesn't matter if the teacher is a male or a female. What matters is the activity, the criminal activity that they are engaged in. And that's how it should be for all of us. It shouldn't be no man versus woman thing. Let them white feminists fight their own battles if that's what they want to make. Because I'm going to tell you, they ain't interested in me as a black man obtaining any kind of power. Because they was real pissed off that black men who saved the Union in the Civil War got the right to vote before they did. And they were real pissed off about that. So I'm not following behind no white feminists. And if you're following behind white feminists, then, you know, guess what? You can do that by yourself without my participation. This is not a gender issue. It's not a racial issue. It's an issue of sexual misconduct, sexual impropriety, sexual coercion. It is about the corruption of our youth. So I'm not trying to hear any gender-based arguments, any, you know, white versus black arguments. Look, wrong is wrong. Like Malcolm X said, I don't care who does it. Wrong is wrong. All right, next story. Let me check the phone line, see if we have anybody wants to come in. Okay, phone lines are clear. Greetings to those who have joined us in the chat room at Black Talk Radio. Excuse me, that is uberconference.com/Black Talk Radio Network. We have a chat room, as well as you can dial in with your headphones and use the computer to dial in if you don't have a phone and what have you. All right, I want to get to this next story. Now, this story right here kind of tripped me out. This is coming to you from the Chicago Tribune. .com. It was written by a woman, it could be a woman, it could be a man, because I know some Asians name their sons Kim, so I don't know. But this is a story that was appeared in the Chicago Tribune by Kim Jansen, and it's a story about this black man. Let me open this story up. Let me close some of this other stuff. He's saying, bring in the United Nations to solve Chicago genocide. All right, so let me give you some of these details. This was published about 5 days ago. I just saw it today, thought I would share it in case anybody missed it. But you have Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin, who is a black man. I don't know how he self-identifies, but, you know, by his skin color in this racist society, he will be classified as black. Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin traveled to New York to discuss Chicago's violence problems with the United Nations Assistant Secretary General for Peacebuilding Support. That's who took the photo. All right, let me read some of this because I already got comments on that. President Donald Trump's implicit threat to put the National Guard on the streets of Chicago to tackle the city's violence problem attracted widespread ridicule earlier this year. But if the soldiers were instead wearing the sky blue helmets of United Nations peacekeepers, there might not be such a problem, according to Cook County Commissioner Richard Boykin, who flew to New York on Thursday to discuss what he described as a quiet genocide in Chicago's black community with the UN's Assistant Secretary General for Peacebuilding Support, Oscar Fernandez Taranco. The United Nations has a track record of protecting minority populations, Boykin told. Man, I don't know what they're talking about when they wrote this. Boykin told before his meeting. There was tribal warfare between the Tutsis and... give me just a second. I need to handle something in the studio. Give me just a second. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I'm back. Just something that needed my immediate attention, as I do got grandkids who's up in the house with me. So, yeah, he says the United Nations has a track record of protecting minority populations. There was a tribal warfare between the Tutsis and the Hutus in Africa, and they deployed peacekeeping troops there to help save those populations and reduce the bloodshed. We have to do something. Black people in Chicago make up 30% of the population, but 80% of those who are killed by gun violence. As how that might differ from sending in the National Guard, Boykin said, the difference is I'm not so sure that the National Guard is so used to peacekeeping in a peacekeeping role. The UN is trained in this. All right, I'm going to stop it there. There are so many angles I could take. All right. Number one, you going to the United Nations to talk about bringing in some peacekeepers to address citizen-on-citizen violence, and I'm not so sure that cops aren't behind some of these unsolved shootings, as it's not like they have not done it before. And it's been documented in a number of books on how they keep gang warfare going. There's a video of Chicago police dropping this young man out, putting him out the car in a rival gang territory. They know what was going to happen to him. All right, we've heard about it in Los Angeles between the Bloods and the Crips. To keep them fighting each other, you would have these police officers who, these slave catchers, who would steal a car of one gang member and then do a drive-by on the rival gang so that they would think that they were just attacked by the other gang. And then what do you know? Hey, the police got a lot of work to do because these people are out here killing each other and whatnot, you know, instigating the violence. So unless they have solved all of these murders in Chicago, don't tell me, I don't want to hear that all the killers are black. Don't even apply that to me, because if they haven't made an arrest, how do you know who's behind the violence? You've seen no evidence. We know the victims are primarily black, but if you're not making an arrest in every case, how do we know the shooters are black? And I have put out there in the past, and I'll put it out there again, I believe that a lot of this violence is perpetrated by Mexican drug cartels. Now, Scotty don't deal with conspiracy theories. I deal in conspiracy facts, all right? And it's a fact, and it has been documented not only by the largest newspaper in Mexico, but in the Chicago Tribune at one time, even though they didn't provide a whole lot of coverage. I don't think CNN reported it. None of your national alphabet networks, I don't think they reported it. I haven't ever come across a video on YouTube of them providing a report on this. But you had the Drug Enforcement Agency, that's the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency, that's the DEA, who made a deal with the Sinaloa Drug Cartel, one of the most powerful drug cartels in Mexico, cut a deal with members of the Sinaloa Drug Cartel and said, we'll allow y'all to smuggle dope from the border up to Chicago if you just feed us some information about your rival cartels, that you know, your guy's competition. And then that way, now I'm paraphrasing now, but this is how that conversation went, I imagine. And then that way, we, the DEA, can go bust some of your competition and take pictures and photographs of all the weapons we seize, all the dope we seize, and a couple of them, you know, in handcuffs. And then we could stand there looking tough like we really doing something while we look the other way while you smuggle the drugs to Chicago. Okay? They had a pipeline straight to Chicago. This was a deal with the U.S. government, the DEA, which is an executive branch agency. All right? This went on during the Obama administration. Okay? All right. So, that's why I say, how do I know that these ain't a bunch of Sinaloa drug cartel members sending their killers up the way to try to take over the street market, and they're the ones that's killing all these black people and don't care if they get caught in the crossfire. Okay? So again, I have circumstantial evidence. I don't have hard evidence. I don't have a video of a Sinaloa drug cartel member hanging out the car with a Uzi blasting on some black folks. No, I don't have that kind of evidence, but I do have circumstantial evidence, which allows me to make an educated guess about who this violence might be connected to. But I say at the same time, y'all ain't got a bunch of videos either of some black people hanging out the car with Uzi shooting up black people. So don't buy into that narrative like we know who's behind the violence. I believe, and the evidence will show, that Chicago police can't be trusted. Hell, they're running a secret black site up there, you know, where they take people and torture them without putting them in the system. And what happened? There was a whole expose done on that. Okay? So they torture people. Do you think I'm going to put it past them to do drive-bys on people? They might do it for fun while they off duty or something. I don't know. Hey, they sure looked like they was having fun gunning down little Laquan McDonald, didn't they? Yeah, we know about John Burge and his torture precinct and all of that. So, you know, this guy right here, man, maybe he's frustrated. Maybe he's not privy to the information I just shared with you. But you're going to go to the United Nations to ask for some help, for some violence in the community, and not go to the UN for some help for these out of control slave catchers? That says a lot. You know what I'm saying? That says a lot. And that just makes you look weak. That you can't control your own environment. You ain't got no answers, no solutions. Okay? So that's just crazy. And then, when has the UN ever stopped genocide anywhere? You want to bring up Rwanda, I think 1 million people. I think that was like a record. People were saying that was a record because of how many people got killed in that short span of time. So I wouldn't be holding up the UN and talking about they did a good job in Rwanda. Hey, you seen Libya lately, Mr. Boykin? Guess who gave the Americans and NATO, the French, permission to facilitate the overthrow of a UN-recognized government with Muammar Gaddafi as his prime minister or president. I don't know what his exact title was. With a UN seat. Who gave them permission to go in there and attack a member UN nation? Why? The United Nations did, Mr. Boykins. And what has happened in, the 6 years since 2011? What has happened in Libya, Mr. Boykin? Have you not been paying attention? I know CNN is the only main outlet that did their little report, but years, Black Talk Radio, Afro Synergy, Black Agenda Report, and other independent outlets have been talking about the genocide and the ethnic cleansing that has been going on in Libya. Where is the UN? The UN authorized that. They put that in motion. Okay? So this dude must not know what really goes down at the UN. And I don't mean to be laughing, y'all, but I'm doing that to keep from cursing. I'm laughing to keep from cursing at this guy apparent ignorance. This is crazy. All right? I'd rather have the National Guard with some people, hopefully, that might look like me. At least they'd be fellow Americans coming in to get a handle on that situation than I would some UN troops from who knows where. And let's not forget how the UN spread cholera in Haiti. And this isn't even ancient history. Let's not forget the sexual assault of little black boys and girls in Africa at the hands of UN peacekeepers. So I don't know how much this guy really knows about the United Nations. And I'll say this last thing about it as we get ready to come up on the top of the hour. We will be kicking some music tonight. I don't have any feature artists. Sorry. I'm just going to play some music, whatever I'm feeling at the top of the hour. But I'll say this before I move to another story. What happened to Chicago-based Minister Louis Farrakhan's army that he was recruiting that was supposed to take care of this situation? Remember, after that last million man, was they still calling it Million Man's March? I can't remember. Okay. Now, I watched it on television. I helped promote it and all of that. And I remember him saying that, we need, what was it? 10,000 warriors, 10,000 that's going to stand in the gap for the black community between the violence of the police and this gang violence. Do y'all not remember that? Justice or Else, I think it was called Justice or Else. And he mentioned that. And I actually did an interview with a Muslim brother who is in the Nation of Islam who took that very serious. And in his region, I think he's in the state of Tennessee. I had to go back and check the archives on that. And I interviewed him, and he was actually trying to do it. He was actually had some people where they were doing that in their community. But it don't appear to me that Mr. Farrakhan put a lot of energy or a lot of resources behind his words. I did not see him going on a national tour to get some people to sign up for this, let's call it a million man army that was going to stand in the gap and stand it as a barrier between police violence and any other violence that would be waged against the black community. I haven't even heard of him talk about it recently. It's like, hey, it never happened, because that would be the appropriate solution. Not going to the UN, not calling on Donald Trump to bring in the National Guard or anything. No. The solution should come from us, okay? The solution is us. And it's just a shame that we got this man out of his ignorance or frustration or whatever it is, got him going to the UN and asking them for some peacekeepers. That's embarrassing as a black man. That's saying, I ain't got guts enough. I ain't got the fortitude. I ain't got the gumption to go out there and solve this problem myself. Okay? That's sad. Maybe if they hadn't murdered Fred Hampton in Chicago, Chicago wouldn't be so violent today. Because what was Fred Hampton able to do? He was able to get those gangs in Chicago to stop fighting each other and fight the system, to engage in political and social activism. And he was murdered by the FBI and the Chicago police while he was asleep in his bed after he was drugged by a proxy racist COINTELPRO informant named O'Neill. I forget his first name. Look, Fred Hampton was solving that problem and they murdered him. But he showed us that all we need is us. And all we need to do is be men and be women and unify and stand up and go out here and talk to these brothers and sisters and let them know what the plan is. So I just could not pass up this story of Chicago violence being in the news again and this million man army that was supposed to stand in the gap for these people ain't nowhere to be found. Who is that on? Okay. All right. We do got a caller. We got Brother Braggs on the line. Greetings to you this evening. Brother Braggs, what's on your mind tonight?
Peace, man. You made me think of a bunch of stuff. You made me, first of all, think of what Malcolm said about chickens come home to roost. Now, on the other side of that coin, remember, Posse Comitatus, they're not supposed to have foreign troops on our soil, so they're violating the law in that respect. The other part of that is that, why do you think they want foreign troops on our soil? Because they have no connection to the community that they're going to come and overrun. Everywhere that these peacekeepers go, they have rape and pillage and plunder.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about criminal behavior that's unchecked. So the next thing, I call it a setup, because if you check statistics for city, crime, Chicago is not even in the last time I checked, it was like the 10th city. So why do we need them to come here? Because check this out. The other part of that coin is that anywhere that we suffer from poverty, unemployment, we're going to have crime.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter if it's in our community or their community. It's a controlled situation, and they know what's up with that. That's how they control the slavery that they do. Everything is about that slavery, generating that duck off that body. Remember, we're talking about a physical asset. We may think of it intangible like a paper stock, but they're actually dealing in bodies, bro. And that's all I wanted to say. I was enjoying the dialogue. Peace, man.
All right. Thanks, Brother Braggs. Anytime, any other stories or topics that you want to chime in on, please don't hesitate to chime right back in. But he's exactly right. They're not. Now, here you got this black man going to the UN, a city councilman. And like Brother Bragg say, don't he know the Constitution? Don't he know the laws of the land that he live in? And he is inviting peacekeeper troops. Again, these, like Brother Bragg said, every place they have gone, these UN peacekeepers have not been charged with keeping the peace, but they've been spreading disease, raping, pillaging, molesting, robbing, stealing. Look, the United Nations is really, they call it the United Nations, but it's really a global white supremacist slavery operation is the way I see it, okay? Especially when the United States is funding most of it and pretty much calls the shots, if you ask me. All right, one quick story before we take our music break. You're listening to Black Talk Radio News with Scotty Reed. One more story. This was shared in the chat room by our friend in the NYC area and comrade tag. Shout out to the abolitionists of New York. HSBC no longer under threat of U.S. prosecution. They probably getting a deal like Wachovia, which was bought out by Wells Fargo. Let me read this. This is about drug money laundering. HSBC has had its prosecution threat lifted in the United States over the allegation of money laundering across Mexico. The bank signed a document known as the Deferred Prosecution Agreement, or DPA, that is considered a type of probation. The document was signed with the U.S. Justice Department in 2012 to avoid, again, Obama administration. This would be who? Either Eric Holder or Loretta Lynch. Signed in 2012 to avoid criminal charges for the alleged laundering of hundreds of millions of dollars for the drug barons of Mexico. The probe by the U.S. said the bank was the conduit for the rogue nations and drug kingpins. Now, again, y'all, check this out. Check out the hypocrisy. You just made a deal. You made a deal. This is documented actually also from records from a Chicago hearing where some top lieutenants for the Sinaloa drug cartel had agreed to some lesser charges, but they also spilled the beans that, hey, we were just working for the DEA. We had a deal. Okay? Don't take Scotty's word for it. Okay? Look, do your own research. Okay? So here you are cutting another bank because Wachovia was busted for the same thing. Wachovia was based here in North Carolina. It got bought out by Wells Fargo, but they got busted doing the same thing, laundering millions. I think it was over $1 billion in drug money. They got a deferred prosecution. What did that mean? Okay, if you just sign this paper right here, agree to forfeit some of your illegally gotten gains. You ain't got to give it all to us. Just give us half, okay? Just give us half, and you can keep the rest. You don't have to admit to no wrongdoing and whatnot, but you got to stop what you're doing. But we're not going to punish you for it if you just enter into this agreement and give us half. We're not going to prosecute you. We're going to put you in the deferred prosecution. So bank CEOs, CFOs, COOs, and everyone in between, board members, stockholders, y'all ain't got to worry about getting prosecuted for profiting off of the international drug game. No, we not going to put y'all in prison. Slavery, prison slavery is for them other people, not y'all. So we got something similar, and this was published December the 11th of this year. It was posted on the dispatchtribunal.com. They're going into another, I'm not sure. Let me read a little bit more. The probe by the U.S. said the bank was the conduit for rogue nations and drug kingpins. HSBC said that the DPA it signed was now expired. Money laundering is disguising proceeds from crime so the money cannot be linked back to any wrongdoing. After the U.S. probe was completed, HSBC admitted to having poor controls established for money laundering and made an apology. The bank paid authorities in the U.S. more than $1.9 billion in a settlement. The banking giant, based in the United Kingdom, was alleged to have been handling transactions for other countries under sanctions by the U.S., such as Sudan, Libya, and Iran. Now, again, all the way up until 2011, Libya was actually a U.S. ally. Okay, they had a signed agreement. That's why you see pictures of Hillary Clinton with some of Gaddafi's sons. That's one evil ass woman. But I tell you, so again, they don't put these people in prison. They just ask for their cut of the profits. Nobody ever goes to prison. So why do you think we keep hearing story after story after story of the story of these big banks, these international banks engaged in this sort of criminal behavior? But the United States is filled with poor people and people just trying to get by, and some people who have drug problems who are filling up the prison plantations. But these crooks, these banksters, they don't never go to jail, man. All they gotta do is buy justice. Cause justice is for sale in this country. And that's not even justice. That's corruption is for sale, is how I should put it. Corruption is for sale. So where did this $1.9 billion go? Did it, who got to keep that money? How did that money get split up? Did it go towards any of America's national debt? I don't know. I don't know. Maybe this is how they're funding, Congress is funding their pay raises they like to give themselves. I don't know. I'm still trying to find out where the money, the $1 billion that's generated every year by that federal prison called Unicorn is going. Where's that money going? Okay, yeah, for those that didn't know, the United States runs a private business, owns a private business called Unicorn that is a private slavery plantation. It's a prison slave plantation. I shouldn't say private, but it is registered as a private business. It's just owned by USA Inc. Where's that $1 billion a year going to? Liza, this is, we're talking huge sums of money that we don't seem to know where it's going. All right. So that was what's in the news. I'm going to grab myself some coffee and kick some music. And when we come back, I want to focus on our main story, is what's been going on here in the North Carolina, in the Carolinas, I should say. For those that don't know, a powerful white man by the name of Richard, I'm about to call him Richard Jefferson, Jerry Richardson, all right, in the Billionaires Boys Club called the NFL, has announced that he's going to sell his majority stake, because he don't own the team. These people that they call him, like, who think that he's the sole owner, no, it's a bunch of different groups that own the Carolina Panthers. He just has the largest share, which is 48%. So he's the majority owner. And he's announced after being exposed by a Sports Illustrated article of making multiple payouts for sexual harassment and calling at least one black person a racial slur. We don't know what that racial slur was, but I can imagine, you know, being that Jerry Richardson is from this area, I can tell you it probably wasn't mook or some term like that. I'm willing to bet you he called him a nigger. Okay, so yeah, that's the main story I want to talk about. It's so much going on. They've been racially showcasing the hell out of some of the coach, who is a Hispanic, out the some of the players, of course, are black. They even had on, as I was listening to the local radio station, one of the local radio stations, they even brought on a former executive who happened to be black. And it's like, dang, what are y'all trying to do? Y'all trying to clean up this old white man's image or something to say, oh, he can't be racist. Look, they got a Hispanic coach. They got a African-American quarterback. We've had African-Americans work in the front office and blah, blah, blah. Cry me a freaking river. All right. That don't mean the man ain't racist. And I'm willing to bet, I'm willing to wager that at 80 years old, and considering that North Carolina, and I imagine the northern part of South Carolina, but North Carolina at one time had the largest due-paying membership of the Ku Klux Klan than any other state. I bet you, if they dig back far enough, and if the witnesses ain't dead already, that you find Jerry Richardson probably had a Klan membership, probably had a Klan, he probably was a card-carrying Klan member, all right? And I'm not basing this just off of this one instance, this reported instance of him using a racial slur towards an African-American. So I'll spend the next hour talking about that. Anything connected to that story that y'all want to chime in on, please feel free to do so. You know, P. Diddy talking about he wants to become the owner. Look, again, he can't get but up to 48%. Okay, them other rich, I'm just going to call them for what they are, and I'm in the South, and this is a Southern term. This isn't a racial term, but it's a Southern term. It is a racial term, but it's not a racist term. But he got to deal with a bunch of these Southern crackers, and if you think these Southern crackers about to let a New York boy who is known for making booty music and videos and pushing liquor, if you about to think that these crackers about to let him get a piece of the Panthers, then you just don't really know how the good old boys club work. Okay, now if he wants to try, I'm all for that, man. This America, live your dream. If you got dreams of getting a majority ownership, but look, Diddy ain't got enough money to do it by himself. That's why he has to start an ownership group. I mean, Jerry Richardson didn't even buy to get the Carolina Panthers started with just his own money. So I heard Colin Kaepernick is interested. P. Diddy's interested. And Steph Curry is interested. Steph Curry actually got a pretty huge piece of Under Armour. Steph Curry seems to be a very acute businessman. So there are ownership groups and whatnot. But when P. Diddy says things like, well, I'm going to buy the Panthers so I can give Colin Kaepernick a quarterbacking job. To me, dude, don't play with us like that. Don't sit up there and try to play on people's emotion and try to latch on to this thing for some publicity or whatever. All right, the Carolina Panthers have a Hall of Fame destined African-American quarterback that the NFL ain't never seen the likes of and probably will never ever see again. So don't play politics, you know, with the issue and exploiting black people's emotion. We already got a black quarterback, dude, and he's pretty doggone good. And I would rather see Colin Kaepernick get an opportunity to start in the NFL. And Colin Kaepernick ain't talking about playing football right now. He talking about becoming an owner. See, he thinking on a whole nother level. All right. So anything related to that story that y'all want to bring up, there's a number of things that y'all are not hearing nationally that's being said here locally, and some background that, you know, I want to really talk about why they showcasing black people. Let that old cracker come out and speak for himself. Did the cat get his tongue or something? You know, so now he supposed to be Big Cat. Let Big Cat speak for himself. Don't ask Cam Newton what he think about Jerry Richardson. Don't ask Ron Rivera what he think about Jerry Richardson. Don't ask no black person, period, or non-white person, period. Ask them people in the front office who work with Jerry Richardson on a day-to-day basis and observe his daily activities, who are privy to his conduct on the job, okay? So, I mean, they playing games with this, y'all, but y'all know Scotty Reed is going to call into these shows like he did yesterday and like he did today and change the conversation to what it's supposed to be focusing on. All right, so you're listening to Black Talk Radio News, part of the Black Talk Radio Network, and we have been broadcasting independent black media since 2008. We're going to kick some music. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I ain't no joke. I used to let the mic smoke. Now I slam it when I'm done and make sure it's broke. When I'm gone, no one gets on, cause I won't let nobody press up and mess up the scene I set. I like to stand in a crowd and watch the people wonder, damn. But think about it, then you understand. I'm just an addict, addicted to music. Maybe it's a habit, I gotta use it. Even if it's jazz or the quiet storm, I hook a beat up, convert it into hip-hop form. Write a rhyme and graffiti in every show you see me in. Deep concentration, cause I'm no comedian. Jokers are wild, if you wanna be tame, I treat you like a child and you're gonna be named. Another enemy, not even a friend of me, cause you'll get fried in the end when you pretend to be competing. Cause I just put your mind on pause and I complete when you compare my rhyme with yours. I wake you up and as I stare in your face, you seem stunned. Remember me, the one you got your idea from. But soon you start to suffer, the tune will get rougher. When you start to stutter, that's when you had enough of fighting it'll make you choke. You can't provoke, you can't cope. You should have broke because I ain't no joke. Joke. As serious as cancer, who can keep the average dancer hyper as a heart attack? Nobody's smiling, cause you're expressing the rhyme that I'm styling. This is what we all sit down and write. You can't make it, so you take it home, break it and bite. Use pieces and bits of all my hip-hop hits. Get the style down, packed, then it's time to switch. Put my tape on pause and add some more to yours. Then you figured you're ready for the neighborhood chores. The E-M-C-E-E, don't even try to be. When you come up to speak, don't even lie to me. You like to exaggerate, dream and imagine it. Then change the rhyme around, that could aggravate me. So when you see me come up, freeze, or you'll be one of those seven MCs. They think that I'm a new jack, but only if they knew that. They who think wrong, or they who can't do that style that I'm doing, they might ruin patterns of paragraphs based on you. And you're all BDJ, if anything he play sound familiar, I'll wait till E-Say play him. So I'ma have to diss who broke, you can get a smack for this. I ain't no joke. Microphone like a grudge, be a whole of record so the needle don't budge. I hold a conversation cause what I invent, I nominated my DJ the president. When I'm C, I'll keep a freestyle going steadily, so pucker up and whistle my melody. But whatever you do, don't miss one, there'll be another rough rhyme after this one. Before you know it, you're following and fiending, waiting for the punchline to get the meaning. Like before, the moral of my story I'm telling, nobody beats the art, so stop yelling, save it, put it in your pocket for later, cause I'm moving the crowd and be a record fader. No interruptions till the mic is broke. When I'm gone, then you can joke. Cause everything is real on a serious tip. Keep playing and I get furious quick, and I take you for a walk through hell. Freeze your dome, then watch your eyeballs swell. Guide you out of triple stage darkness. When it get dark again, then I'ma spark this microphone, cause the heat is on. You see smoke in the finish when the beat is gone. I'm no joke, joke.
Black Talk Radio, since 2008, providing new black media for the masses.
Child educator, Jam Master J, king of the crossfader. greatest, as I was told. Everything that he touched turned to gold. He's the greatest of the great. I get it straight, he's great. Claim fame, cause his name is known in every state. His name is Jada, see him play, we'll make you say. Goddamn, that DJ made my day. Like the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. He's a maker, a breaker, and a title taker. Like a little old lady who lives in a shoe. If cuts were kids, he would be you. Not lying, y'all, he's the best I know. And if I lie, my nose will grow. Like a little with a boy named Pinocchio. And you all know how the story go.
Tricks up for kids, he plays much kids. He's a big bad wolf, and yo, the three bigs. He's a big bad wolf in your neighborhood. Not bad, meaning bad, but bad, meaning good. There it is.
That's Run DMC, and that's the Peter Piper, I'm sorry, yeah. Love that old school hip-hop. Now, let me get to this story. Again, if you have any questions or comments, you can give us a call at 866-510-9025. That's 866-510-9025. Hit star to put yourself in the queue. And so I know Monday, this was a big story, especially here in this part of the Carolinas. I sit just outside of Charlotte, got family members in Charlotte and whatnot. But Jerry Richardson comes out that he had settled four cases, at least. Now, that's all we know of is four cases. But he settled four settlements, I guess we should call them settlements, due to inappropriate workplace comments and conduct by owner Jerry Richardson, including sexually suggestive language, other words, sexual harassment. And on at least one occasion, again, they're saying at least one occasion, he might have done it more. This is all that we could document. But on at least one occasion, directing a racial slur at an African-American Panthers scout. Of course, the settlements came with non-disclosure requirements forbidding the parties from discussing the details. So how did this come out? Who were the sources of Sports Illustrated? It had to be either former employees or current employees. Now, you know, call it coincidence, call it whatever you want to call it. But if you go to Black Talk Radio's Twitter account, on Thursday nights on the Black Talk Radio Network on a station called The Context of White Supremacy, they do what's called workplace racism. And I'm a big fan of that program, as we have people call in with suggestions on how to deal with racists in the workplace. Okay? Because all of us are not self-employed and whatnot. And even self-employed people still have to deal with contractors or potential clients and banks and what have you, and they face racism in those interactions. So on that day, about 12 hours before this news broke, because the news broke, I put out the tweet on the 16th, and the news came out at noon, just about 12 hours later on the 17th. But my tweet, y'all can go check my Twitter for that date. And I tweeted to Gus of the Context of White Supremacy, goes under at Until Justice. I said, matter of fact, let me just pull up the tweet, because I mentioned it. Well, it's actually in btrcommunity.com, because I took a screenshot of my tweet, and under that screenshot of my tweet. I posted the tweet from SI. So just bear with me. Let me pull up this tweet because I want to give you the exact information of what I said. I'm on Twitter now. So I asked Gus, I said, when are all these white people going to come out and tell us about the racism that they witness on the job, like they exposing these sexual harassers? And so this is exactly what I said. I found it. All right. I said, at Until Justice, when all these white people going to start coming out and telling us about all the racism they witnessed on the job against non-white people, like they exposing the sexual harassers? Let us see them come forward with stories, hashtag workplace racism. And I put the little emoji with the guy with the monocle, you know, the little looking glass over his one of his eyes and whatnot. Said, yeah, let's look and see. And less than 24 hours later, Sports Illustrated comes out with a tweet exclusive. Jerry Richardson and the Panthers made multiple payouts for workplace misconduct, including sexual harassment and the use of a racial slur, sources tell at SI Now. And so the African-American who was called probably the N-word, called a nigger and whatnot. Again, we don't know the exact racial slur he used, but, you know, we'll take an educated guess at that one. And he said that, no, I'm not one of SI sources. I got a non-disclosure agreement. If I tell people what this racist did, then I would lose my settlement or I have to give it back and what have you. So this is either coming from people who used to work in that front office or maybe current employees. Somebody tipped Sports Illustrated, who had been working on this story for at least 10 months. And it couldn't happen to a better person, for a lack of a better word, than Jerry Richardson, because he tried to play hardball with his players when they expressed a desire to be in solidarity with other NFL players and call attention to the brutal violence of these slave catchers, and basically told them that if they participate, that they may not have a job, okay? And they didn't. Y'all ain't seen no pictures of the Carolina Panthers taking a knee or anything. Well, there was one player who's no longer with the Panthers that one time he raised up the Black Power fist. Guess what? He ain't no longer with the Panthers, okay? Yes, this has been going on, okay? And it's not getting national attention, but it's been getting local media attention. And that player, I think his name is Trey Boston, and there was another one too. It was two of them. And they put up the little Black Power fist during the national anthem, and they got cut. They ain't no longer playing for the Carolina Panthers. Julius Peppers, who they wouldn't dare cut because he just came back to care. He's a Carolina homeboy. Went to the University of North Carolina, where he was a two-sport star in basketball and football. Was drafted number 2 overall by the Carolina Panthers. How long Julius been playing? Over 10 years, something like that. Okay. And then he left to play for Chicago, and he played for Green Bay, and they brought him back. And, you know, he is a future Hall of Famer. And Julius Peppers, though, he's a real quiet type guy. He don't really speak in public a lot. People call him introverted or whatever term they use for quiet people. But Julius Peppers wouldn't come out at all during the game that they wanted to protest and Richardson gonna threaten them. So he stayed in the locker room. And I salute Julius Peppers for having the balls to say, you know what, bump this. I ain't coming out, period. And he stayed in the locker room during the national anthem. And didn't nobody say nothing to him either, okay? Because he don't care. Julius do not care, all right? I don't think it's too many people that want to start a fight with Julius Peppers. All right, so this is what's been going on. And then just the racism that Cam Newton has faced since they drafted him. I remember calling in to this station that I listened to and threatening to boycott the Carolina Panthers if they did not draft the Heisman winner and national champion quarterback Cam Newton because they didn't want a black quarterback. I'm serious. I'm serious, man. Because I know how this area is. And you even had people on the station. That's why I called in some of these white boys that dominate that station to, let's take a cornerback. Let's wait till Andrew Luck come out. I wouldn't take Cam Newton. He got character issues and all this and that. And I called in. I said, you know what? I've been a lifelong Panther fan. All right, I used to be a Detroit Lions fan because I lived in Detroit for a certain period of my life. But I'm born and bred right here in North Carolina. Spent most of my adult life here in North Carolina, except for the 6 years that I spent in the U.S. military. And if y'all do not draft this dude, then guess what? I'm no longer a Panther fan. They got mad at me. Oh, what kind of threat is that? No. I'm just letting you know, and I'm telling other people, I'm putting other people on notice. They don't draft Cam Newton. It's because they racist. Okay? But they ended up drafting Cam Newton, and he's faced nothing but racialized coverage and making big deals out of nothing. You know, he's celebrating in the end zone, acting like Superman, you know, pulling open his chest, his shirt to reveal the S. I mean, these Southern crackers was going crazy over that. And now look at the NFL this year. Now you got players being allowed to celebrate any way they want to. And I would say him acting, doing the little Superman move is quite tame to some of the stuff these guys is doing in the end zone. But, you know, that's just the environment that I have seen from the outside that exists in the sports culture in Charlotte. Very much a good old boys, but no, they ain't going to practice blatant racism up in your face because they know they need you if they want to be successful in sports. They know they can't win without black people and what have you, without black athletes and what have you. So anyway, that's what's been going on. Now it comes out that Jerry Richardson called somebody a nigger and he was making these females stand up so that on Jeans Day, or I guess it was Casual Friday or whatever, and making these ladies stand up talking about their behinds, you know, looking at their derrieres, looking at their bottoms. You know, I don't know if they're wearing apple bottom jeans or what, but, you know, looking at them in a sexual manner like they a piece of meat for him to inspect and whatnot. And then here, Let me play this clip because SI says that they have some new details because I went to pull up the original article, but now they have an updated article and it has a video of a reporter, Priya Desai, I guess is how you pronounce her name. And we're going to take a listen to this new report from Sports Illustrated. So let me go ahead and cue that up.
The news detailing allegations of sexual harassment and racist behavior involving Jerry Richardson. The Carolina Panthers owner then announced he is selling the team at the end of the season. John Wertheim, along with Viv Bernstein, were the reporters on the story. John joins me now. John, the news came out on Friday that the Panthers were investigating Richardson. At that point, had you spoken to the team? Did they know that this was coming down?
Yeah, Friday, the team, you'll remember, announced the investigation that, curiously, was going to be led by a minority partner, Erskine Bowles. The team had gotten wind that we were reporting. As we expected, we talked to a number of employees, and it stood to reason someone would tell the team. So the team had wind of this. They did the Nixonian Friday night press release that they were conducting an investigation. That sort of, I mean, just candidly, that accelerated the process. We sent them questions Saturday, they responded Sunday, and the story went up before kickoff Sunday.
The Panthers allegedly knew the undercurrent of this behavior from Richardson. As a reporter who's covered the sports world for years, were you surprised? Was the NFL community surprised?
It's funny. I can't really speak to that. I mean, you know, sort of the facts are the facts, and you know, clearly there was a certain culture that we detailed. You know, it's unclear to me who knew what and who was complicit and who wasn't complicit, and I wonder whether this investigation goes forward if there's a sale, if Jerry Richardson is no longer the owner. Is there still an investigation? Because, as we allege in the story, Jerry Richardson was a perpetrator, but this was a workplace. This was also a situation involving an organization.
The Panthers and Jerry Richardson are synonymous, but this announcement for this sale came very quickly. And you look at a similar controversy in Donald Sterling, the former Clippers owner. He refused to go down without a fight. Why the sudden announcement? Why not a fight?
Yeah, that's a question for Jerry Richardson. You know, he's 81 years old. He's already said that the team would not go to his sons and that he would be selling the team. I mean, obviously, you can sort of draw your own inferences about yesterday's two news events and whether they're related. But, you know, I think, and I wonder if he has further statement. But, you know, at 81 years old and in the face of some of the details that we provided, you know, you wonder sort of what his thinking was.
In that statement, he didn't discuss any of the allegations. So I wonder two things. One, are there more allegations that are going to surface about him? And then I wonder what is going to happen with the investigation, because this isn't going away.
I think that's the big question, whether the NFL pursues this investigation, even if Jerry Richardson is no longer the owner, even if he goes through with this sale. You know, I mean, I think the big question now, I think, is what happens to this franchise overall. And there's a pledge Jerry Richardson had made in exchange for, you know, almost $90 million to keep the team tethered to Charlotte for several more years. Does that now still have validity if there's an owner from another market? I mean, I have to say, as a sports fan, it would be a real pity if Charlotte lost its NFL team. This has been a good fan base. I mean, this has been a sort of a loyal community. If they lost their NFL team over the bad acts of their owner, that would be a pity. But I think the question now becomes, what's the fate of this organization?
Were you surprised that it came so quickly after filing?
Candidly, yes. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, this story dropped around kickoff of the Panthers game, and at dinner time, we have an announcement the team's suddenly for sale. Again, read into that what you will. The team's communications with us were very minimal. I mean, they sort of re-released the same statement they put up Friday saying no comment, and we, you know, try to aspire to a workplace of equality. So, yeah, I mean, I think there are probably some questions that ought to be directed at the Panthers now.
Jerry Jones reflected on what happened, and he said, I'm paraphrasing, that he wants all those kinds of men, referring to Richardson, that we could have in the NFL. Surprising. But are we going to hear similar sentiments? What's going to come from owners in the league?
I mean, we talk about the NFL ownership as an exclusive fraternity, and this seems like closing ranks. I mean, again, I saw that statement from Jerry Jones and thought of the people I spoke to. If you're the African-American scout that we spoke to who allegedly left the team after Jerry Richardson directed a racial slur at him, you have another owner saying that the NFL will be depleted in the absence of Jerry Richardson. We need more of that. Wonder what that scout is thinking today.
We've seen a reckoning in the media, in politics, in Hollywood. With this news and the news coming out from the NFL Network from last week, is a sports world going to become engulfed in that post-Harvey Weinstein wave?
Yeah, I think there was a sense until last week of, boy, it's curious, the sports world has really avoided this wave. And you think about the circumstances, and you think about the power dynamic and the power imbalance and the male-to-female ratio, sort of all the dimensions to this climate. And it's very curious that sports managed to avoid this. I think just logically, I mean, now we've got two examples in the last 2 weeks, as you referenced the NFL Network, Jerry Richardson. We hear murmurings of some other scenarios. I think you mentioned the word reckoning, and it does seem as though sports will get its reckoning.
This could be just the beginning.
There you go.
Thank you very much.
All right. So I'm going to leave it there. That is again, and I'm going to go ahead and post this story in btrcommunity.com. Again, this is the social media community for Black Talk Radio Network. Let me go ahead and get that posted for those that might want to check that out or share it with others. Now, here's the thing, a number of things there. These owners, they're going to close ranks. As I heard today, the NFL is going to continue its investigation. They're not going to stop investigating just because the Panthers' majority owner, Richardson, is going to sell. Okay, sell his stake in the team. Again, he owns a 48% stake. He's the majority owner, but they got a whole bunch of other little groups and families, that own the rest of the Carolina Panthers. So it's not as simple as Jerry Richardson going to sell the team. He don't own the entire team. He owns a stake, a majority stake in the team. And he's the founder, so, you know, he gets that title, the owner. But it's not him by himself. Now, I heard, you know, again, I've been monitoring the number one sports talk radio show, WFNZ, here, which is based in Charlotte. And, you know, the conversation came up today along those lines. And I'm sitting here thinking, yeah. And this other guy, I give him credit, Chris Kroger, brought up the fact that, you know what? I expect these NFL owners, other owners, to try to make this go away without any more dominoes falling, because they are probably guilty of the same thing. That's why you don't see any other NFL owners coming out saying, oh, this is terrible. He's a scourge of the league. He's black in the eye of the NFL. We are not going to stand for this, Jerry, and we're going to dress you down and call you out publicly. No, we're not hearing none of that, because you know what? Because they all on the same team and we ain't in it, okay? They closing ranks. And I bet you he ain't the only one who has either directed racial slurs at non-white people or has sexually harassed. Now, why it's on my mind, let me bring this up. Now, that radio station, WFNZ, sometimes I can't listen to it, all right, because they start engaging in what I call racism. And if I can't get my two cents in, I'm turning you off. That's just how I am. Okay, so I was listening yesterday, and on Monday, after the story broke, all I was hearing was white splaining. Jerry Richardson, he's done so much for the city of Charlotte. He's done this and he's done that. And he's given money to this and he's given money to that. And this just doesn't seem like him. And maybe he just paid off these people, not because he's guilty, but because he didn't want the Panthers' image to be sullied, because, you know, the Panthers are all about good character guys. You know, we don't want any thugs and criminals and whatnot as players or a part of our organization and what have you. And so I called in because I'm tired of hearing that white splaining. And they even know me. They know me by Scotty from Mount Holly. That's how they know me. So if anybody from WFNZ comes across the podcast, yeah, that's me, Scotty from Mount Holly. Yeah, Frank Garcia, he blocked me because I told him straight up on Twitter, man, you be trying to practice racism on the sly, you know. And so anyway, so I called in and I was like, look, let me say this. This is disgusting, especially from an organization that so-called prides itself on having character people working for it. All right. But I said, all these people that you got calling in, oh yeah, because they had this black dude they was interviewing. And he used to work in the Carolina Panthers front office. So I listened to this black dude give a good report on Jerry Richardson, and I was getting pissed off. Okay, not pissed off at the victim, okay, at the black man. Yeah, he got to be more mature, and he got to be loyal to his people before he loyal to this organization. All right. And he giving a good report on Jerry Richardson, and, you know, Mr. Richardson treated me with respect, and, you know, I don't feel like he was a racist or anything like that. So, you know, part of my comments, I pointed out to them, I was like, I think it's unfair for the media to be asking Cam Newton questions, because they asked him questions about it on Sunday when he's supposed to be talking about the game they just got through playing. They asking him about this racist sexual harasser named Jerry Richardson. And so I'm like, that's unfair to put Cam Newton or the coach or to be bringing on these former employees, because all they can tell you is what they saw. And report on their personal interactions with Jerry Richardson. And I told them a true story, and I told this story before on air. I used to work for an international dye company. I was a third shift supervisor. Before that, I was on the second shift running my portion of the lab. This was before I became a supervisor. And I worked at this company. And there was this vice president, first name Gary. I don't even recall his last name. But this a white guy. He was Jewish as well, but he was white, okay? And he treated me, he was cool with me, man. He talked to me like I was one of the fellas and what have you. I mean, he didn't talk down to me. He talked to me like I was his equal, you know? Even though I was not his equal in that power dynamic. He was just talking to me like I was one of the boys or something. And he got a little too comfortable with me because I couldn't figure out, dude, you work first shift. You know, what are you doing up here this late at night? Why are you out here in the break area? This is what I'm saying to myself, right? But then I start peeping that, oh, I see what he's doing. He's trying to push up on these black female employees, these temporary workers, and using his position to possibly get them a permanent position in order if they sleep with him. I saw this with my own eyes, okay? And then one time we was in a break area and he was bragging about how he'd be taking them out on his boat on Lake Norman and what have you. And I ain't say nothing. I just listened. But I didn't say nothing. I didn't say, oh, really? That's cool, man. And hey, take me with you and all that. No, Sky didn't say nothing. He ain't open his mouth. He just listened. And I'm listening to this dude brag about how he taking these poor black females out on his boat, sexing them up. He didn't admit to me that he was having sex with them. He just said he'd take them out on his boat. This a married man, so I know you ain't taking these females out there and not having sex with them or whatnot. And so, you know, he let that be known. So I didn't say nothing, you know. But then one day I'm at home. Again, I was on third shift at this time. And this guy also signed off on me being promoted to supervisor. So I ain't have a bad word to say about the dude in relation to what me and his interactions were. Okay, he didn't come off as being racist to me. He didn't come off as treating me with anything but dignity and respect. But I got a call one day from a lawyer, and she told me that she was calling me. And she was representing this woman by the name of Stephanie. She was a young black girl. She was a permanent worker at that time, though. And I had known about him giving her a porn tape and telling her to go watch it and then come back and talk to him about her film review. Yes, he did this. I saw him pushing up on her all the time and whatnot. And this was even during first shift. This wasn't like, you know, at night when there's really no one around. I saw him pushing up on her doing first shift, you know, because I would, again, I work third shift, so sometimes I'm working over. And so when her attorney called me and asked me would I be willing to give a deposition, I said yes. And I told the truth about what I had saw and what I had heard. And they settled out of court with her. And like I told them guys on WFNZ, By all outward appearances, this was a great guy. He was cool. Everybody would love to have a boss like him. You know, I probably could have went and chilled with him on the boat. All I had to do was ask. That's how he was making me feel. But I don't roll like that, though. You know what I'm saying? I don't roll like that. So I said, just because somebody appears to be a good person, a quote unquote good person, by outward appearances, those other employees, that coach, that quarterback, wasn't privy to other things that people are privy to. And I told that one dude who tried to say, oh, he was just paying them off. It doesn't mean he did it. I was like, look, that's not how these settlements work. And I told him the story I just told you. I got a call. I gave a deposition. I saw what I saw, and he did what he did. And then they changed their tune the rest of the program. Then they started talking about it from a logical perspective. Then this other white guy, he was a reporter. He called in, and I like the way he put it, you know, because I only have so much time to I got to say what I got to say in 2 minutes or less. But he was being interviewed, so he had some time to say what he wanted to say. And he let him know. He said, you know what? I ain't interested in hearing no stories from Ron Rivera about my brother died and Jerry Richardson flew me on his personal plane and to my brother's funeral. He said, I ain't trying to hear none of them stories like that. He said, there's smoke, and where there's smoke, there's fire. And then they're going to ask him, well, does this damage the reputation and the legacy of Jerry Richardson? And he said, you doggone right it does. This is serious. There are real victims here. And I was so appreciative of that white reporter for blasting on them like that, because that's what they plan to do on that station, was to white-splain for Jerry Richardson and give him a pass. And, oh, he's not all bad, is he? Okay, hey, I'm sure you could probably go find some people that knew Hitler, and he probably did some nice things for them too. So what? That don't mean that he still wasn't a bad person doing bad things. Racism is as racism does. Sexual harassment is as a sexual harasser does. It's that simple. Okay? So I don't want people to get mad at these black people, because the focus should be on Jerry Richardson. And that's what the Panthers is trying to do. Why you got sending out Ron Rivera? Is it because he Hispanic? Is it because he non-white? We don't care how many, if he got an African-American quarterback and a Hispanic coach. You know, the NFL does have, what do they call that, affirmative action. You have to interview at least one minority head coach when you're looking for a new coach, okay? And it's not like these guys did not have the talent and the resume to be qualified for the position. Cam Newton was a Heisman winner and won the national championship. We're undefeated, okay? Ron Rivera had prior coaching experience. Used to be a player for the Chicago Bears championship team. Later went to the San Diego Chargers. Okay, always had defenses that was at the top of the league. So he didn't hire these people because they was black or because they was Hispanic. He was required to interview a minority for the head coaching job, but he wasn't required to get. No, he hired the best person for the job, because at the end of the day, it's a business and you're trying to make money. And how do you make money in football? By winning, okay? That means having the best coach, having the best players. So don't try to say like, oh, I don't want to hear from these players. Oh, Mr. Richardson held my hand when I was about to have surgery on my ruptured Achilles and all of that. Look, dude, it ain't about you, okay? It's about the victims. It's about this guy ain't even trying to defend himself. He ain't say when he wrote his little statement, and when he knew that this SI article was coming out, and I don't even know if he wrote it. They could have had his publicist write it. He didn't say, I'm sorry. Our fan base doesn't deserve this. Our players don't deserve this. The organization doesn't deserve this. This is all on me. I'm going to follow my sword. And this guy didn't even apologize or acknowledge that he did anything wrong. All he basically said was, I'm selling the team and I'm going to be the number one fan of the team. There was no apology. There was no acknowledgement of wrongdoing whatsoever. Now, I was saying that, why don't you send out some of them people from the front office? Okay? Stop asking these coaches. Stop asking these players. They ain't in no position to give you the 411 on this sexual harassment and workplace racism. Call the team president. Oh, you don't got one because he left and went to Buffalo. But check this out. Now, they just elevated this white female. She's now, I think she's in a CEO position. They're saying she's the most powerful woman in football based on her position. Guess how this woman got this position? She came to the Carolina Panthers as a cheerleader. Okay? And she then worked her way up from cheerleading with a degree in marketing. And now she is this chief executive in the Panthers organization. Send her out there to answer these questions about whether or not she witnessed any sexual harassment. If she witnessed these women standing, you know, being treated like this. Did she hear him call this black man a nigger? See, ask them. They work in the front office with Jerry Richardson. They know. So ask them. Don't showcase the non-white people to come out here and be good character references for Jerry Richardson. I peep game, y'all. I peep game. I know how the game is played. And they playing games. And I'm glad, I forget the primetime host. It might have been Chris Kroger. I'm glad he said the same thing today because I couldn't get in. But I'm glad he said this is disgusting on the Panthers' part. Why are you putting Ron Rivera in this position? Don't you got a PR department? Don't you got other executives? Why are you putting this on the players and the coach? Why are you putting them in the spotlight and to take these questions and whatnot? They can't tell you nothing about it, but them people who work in the front office can. And so they invited this white woman who worked her way up from cheerleader to the most powerful woman in the NFL based on her position with the Carolina Panthers. She wouldn't come on the station for an interview. And I thought, oh, isn't that interesting? Why? Why? Is she afraid somebody going to ask her if Jerry Richardson ever treated her in a similar fashion? And if maybe that's how you could go from cheerleader to the CEO position or the COO position? Huh? Huh? Wait, what kind of, did you let Jerry Richardson shave your legs? Because that's one of the things that he's accused of, saying, oh, I want to shave your legs and stand up and let me see what you're working with and all that. Was you standing up and letting Jerry inspect that behind? Was he putting that nair on your legs and then shaving your legs? And next thing you know, you got a promotion. And then it went a little further and you got another promotion and it kept going. And now you're the most powerful woman in the NFL. I kind of think they trying to avoid those type of questions. What about y'all? That's what I think is going on. I could be wrong, but I don't think that I am. Let me check the phone lines. I'm sorry. I was not looking as I was totally immersed in my commentary on this story. But we got a caller from 646. Thank you for calling in to BTR News. Give us your name and go ahead with your question or comment. 646.
Oh, Pete.
Can you hear me?
Pete.
Yeah.
Oh, pardon.
Yeah, Gaston, yeah, hang on for me, brother. I think that's Mike who called in earlier to Tando. We got Tag on first, and then we'll come to you. Tag, go ahead, bro.
Absolutely. Peace to everyone, and definitely feeling the discussion a great deal. I had initially chimed in just to follow up a little bit on the story around this, the ending of the terms of the agreement around this bank, which I, you know, just found to be a really particularly intriguing article. You know, I'm not that up on the source of this article, but they certainly tried to downplay the criminality that this bank was involved in by saying hundreds of millions of dollars. If you look at other sources, as far as, you know, what all this bank was involved in, as far as this laundering is concerned, you know, most all of them are talking about it in to the tune of billions. And it seems highly unlikely that such a bank would settle for this, you know, so-called record amount of $1.9 billion if it wasn't making billions.
Right.
Plus, you know, so I thought that that was just very telling. And you know, the fact that, okay, so now this term, this period is over, you know, they repeated their apologies and, you know, made these claims. But in this article, there's one sentence that I found particularly revealing when they say, quote, authorities brought the DPA to brought the DPA, you know, this deferred this deferred agreement,
prosecution agreement, deferred prosecution, right, agreement.
Exactly. Thank you. The deferred prosecution agreement, authorities brought the DPA to avoid any prosecution, which, if it led to an indictment, would have meant the government of the U.S. could not conduct business with the bank any longer. So, I mean, you know, it's not funny, but I mean, as you stated before, like, you know, rather laugh than be cursing or crying out here. I mean, you know, when any of us out here, you know, gets caught up in you know, any kind of, you know, criminal investigation, prosecution, et cetera, oftentimes we're not having those kinds of
agreements, you know,
so to speak, considerations. That's not a concern of the U.S. government under normal circumstances. They wouldn't be able to do business with HSBC anymore if they prosecuted anyone for,
right,
what they are defining as crimes.
Right.
So let's just make a deal. You know, very, very revealing there. But also just earlier in the broadcast, you were talking about those who seem to really be taken with and get some sort of pleasure out of watching and distributing images and footage of human beings being assaulted and murdered by slave catchers, and that certainly seems to be a real problem out here. I feel like it connects with this story that you're talking about right now, as far as this so-called owner of the Carolina Panthers and all of the sexual violence. You know, that, I mean, it's foundational to this corporate state, mm-hmm, sexual violence and all sorts of, you know, very disgusting relationships with violence and sexuality. So, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's a huge shock to most anyone that all of these allegations are being made, but it's pretty, you know, low and, you know, I guess you could say disappointing that even something like that, even a question like sexual exploitation and violence can be so exploited out here by, you know, the dependent and corporate media apparatus and various others, like, that this that the, you know, and I appreciate the analysis that you brought to this particular story, but that, you know, widely this kind of issue is being basically trafficked and commodified in the same way that most everything else is out here in this environment. And but I connect that to this question because I found myself very disturbed recently, maybe a couple weeks back, in just, you know, monitoring some developments, you know, in the news, and finding that literally, I think that this was CNN, and I named them because, you know, with all that's going on, it seems crucial to me now, especially that we are very clear about what these you know, corporations are doing and who's responsible for it, you know, in the post net neutrality environment, et cetera. But I'm trying to read about police terror on CNN's website, if I'm not mistaken, owned by Turner Broadcasting, and they're trying to show me, and essentially forcing me to re-witness this brother Miguel Richards being murdered by these local slave catchers in New York, in the form of an ad, a pop-up ad on this device that I was looking at this news report on, and literally the footage from the body cam was in the form of a pop-up, you know, that I it took me a while to remove from my visual, you know, space, you know, right there. And it's something that y'all talk about on Abolitionist Radio, and I greatly appreciate that, you know, but it's so sick and violent, and it's such a violation of our senses that we are being forced in some instances to re-witness or witness for the first time, you know, our sisters and brothers being slaughtered by these slave catchers out here. And I mean, did his family, you know, okay that footage being commodified in this right. way? Like, how is that? What's the corporate structure behind that, where they're just literally capitalizing off of,
that's,
you know,
a good question,
the footage?
That's a good, you know, question. You know, the families ought to sue them.
Absolutely.
If they're showing advertisement on that video, and yes, we need to spread awareness, but we can do that with still pictures that, you know, and then you can just put in words all the graphic stuff, you know. But it's slave catcher porn, man. That's what it is, man. And they're making money off of it. And it's just further exploitation, as you have pointed out. So I'm in agreement with you.
No doubt. I mean, I felt like I needed to share that because, I mean, that was something that changed my whole day. You know, I was doing things that I felt, you know, were worthwhile in that moment, you know, headed to an action, et cetera. And, you know, that just totally shifted my mood to have to, you know, I was already aware that this has occurred. I was already infuriated by it. And they're forcing me to see it as part of their advertising campaign, you know?
Yeah, sick, man. We live in a sick society, man, and we shouldn't be surprised when slavery is still the law of the land. I mean, if you're willing to enslave people, what won't you do, you know?
No, exactly. Exactly true. And just shouts to the work that everybody out here is doing, you know, on the network writ large, and, you know, just continuing to just respect the kind of the real, you know, community building that goes on out here. And I did want to mention, you had mentioned about grabbing some coffee real quick, and just to connect off of the BTR community. And, you know, just how valuable that is as a platform and as a resource. I'm almost certain it was BTR community that I first heard about this from. But Sweet Unity Farms, owned by Jackie Robinson's son. His name escapes me right now, but they have a coffee operation out of Tanzania, and I've been messing with their coffee off of the recommendation from someone on BTR Community, and it's definitely worthwhile. You know, dark owned business. You know what I'm saying? Jackie Robinson's son, it seems he's been doing it for a while, and you know, that's the kind of information that is being disseminated on that platform. Obviously, you know, above and beyond your farce books and the rest. So just much appreciated for that space, you know, that you've established.
All right. Well, thank you, Tag, for everything that you do in contributing to our media operations as a member of the family. All right. So did you have anything else, or can I move on and speak with Mike?
No, please move on, and just much appreciated. I'll continue to keep the discussion.
All right, Tag. All right. I think if I remember your name, Mike, calling out of my hometown area. I was born in Gastonia, but Mike, go ahead and share your question or your comment with us.
Yeah, man, I'm stalking y'all program tonight, man. You and the Stando Radio, I really enjoy y'all, man. And I just want to give a shout out to that last caller, man, that young brother there, man, to give me hope for the future. He just now waking up, not waking up, he just now is just now being brought to his attention the way that these oppressors operate, you know what I mean? I can remember, what, about 8 years ago or more, maybe 9 years now, when Obama got elected, and how it seemed like everybody black was just exhausted with being happy. You know what I'm saying? We just were so happy that it happened, and we thought things were going to be better, but you couldn't go to work and say nothing about it. Do you remember that? You couldn't say nothing about it around the people at your work, the white people at your workplace, because you knew that they had voted for McCain. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so I was self-employed at that time, so I missed out on that. Sorry. No, I was saying I was self-employed in 2008, so, but I can imagine. Okay. I can imagine. Yeah. Don't bring that Obama stuff on the job.
Yeah, so, you know, I was cool. You know what I'm saying? But I remember how I felt. But then I contrast that feeling with the way not black people, but the way white people were feeling when Trump got elected. Oh, man, they were so down. They was upset. They were just upset across the board. And I was like, what y'all upset about? You know what I'm saying? Y'all candidate won or whatever. That's who y'all voted for. Nah, we didn't want him. We just didn't want her. You know what I'm saying?
Mm.
And what it lets me know is, you know what I'm saying, like you were saying, you know, if you practice slavery, what, nothing shocks me what happens with these people. From the banks, from when they went to Nicaragua back in the 80s, the kid, what was the guy's name? It was, they called
they ended up putting him in
jail.
Talking about. I know who you're talking about. I just can't call
Escobar.
His name. No, Escobar. Escobar was the guy, the Colombian drug lord.
Yeah,
the guy that was running Panama. Damn it, what is his name? I can't think. But Panama was helping facilitate via their airstrips. The drug, the Contra drug camp, you know, where they were flying and giving them weapons and for cocaine.
Yeah.
And the CIA was, yeah, that was going down in Nicaragua. I can't think of his name. He just actually got out of prison in the last 10 years, but he had him locked up. He was the president of Nicaragua. I can't think. Or was it Panama that I'm thinking of?
It was Nicaragua, actually, the president, or some high official. But what I'm saying is, when we was down there in that conflict, it was not for peacekeeping or
right.
Democratic. It was for us to install the person we want to sell dope. Wanting to deliver our dope to us. That's what we was down there for.
Well, there was also down there to overthrow what they call those socialist governments. Don't matter if they were democratically elected. They're socialists, okay. So we got to take them out.
Okay. Yeah, and that's a fact, and that's cool. But when I start looking at your record, you know what I'm saying, your record speaks for itself. Just like I can go on and on from Asia to even in Afghanistan with, what do we have people overdosing on now? Opiates. And what are they using when they can't get the opiates? They're using what? They're using heroin. Mm-hmm. Where is the biggest heroin field at in the world?
In Afghanistan.
You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
The movie, the Denzel movie, put it right there in the front, right there on the big screen for you to see that America is profiting off the drug trade in more than one way. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But my thing is this. I don't get surprised with none of this stuff that the oppressor is doing or has done, and that kind of upsets me because I'm kind of what you call toughened from what I've seen. You know what I'm saying? It's like you say, they keep pushing this police porn on us, this police violence porn on us. You know what I'm saying? And it almost numbs you from seeing it.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine what our ancestors had to see during physical bondage. Well, I can't say during because it's still going on, but during that time period,
I call it pre 1865 slavery is how I make the distinction.
Yeah, so I can only imagine what their minds got toughened from. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Yeah.
I don't even want to imagine. They give me nightmares when I imagine the stuff that they put our people through. But my thing is this, talking about Jerry Rich, every place I've ever worked where the dynamic was sexually active, aged male in power, Jerry Richardson, what he's been described, what has been espoused about him, it's him. That's what they all are. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's either.
Yeah.
I just came from some white folks down here in the bottom of Georgia, and I asked them what's going on down here. You know what I'm saying? Two white dudes. They're probably 30s, mid 30s, early 30s. He said there ain't not going on around here but three things: working, drinking, and sex. That's it. Ain't nothing else to do in a small town but to work, to drink, and to have sex.
Now,
so
listen though, Mike. Now, I didn't mention this during the broadcast, but one of the reasons I wasn't shocked to hear this about Jerry Richardson. Look, this 80-something-year-old man, he probably voted for Strom Thurmond or Jesse Helms or somebody. Like, I wouldn't put it past them to have a Klan membership back in the 50s or whatever, okay? But let's not forget how Denny's was treating black folks now, because he used to own Denny's. And the NFL knew he was a racist. And they were talking about this on WFNZ yesterday, saying that the NFL told him he had to get rid of his ownership in that restaurant chain that had been settling a whole bunch of racism, discrimination, lawsuits, wasn't letting black folks be served and practicing segregation, like in his youth. You know what I'm saying? So I wasn't surprised knowing that he owned Denny's, and the NFL probably not surprised, but they told him that you can't practice this racism in the NFL like that, because most of our players are black. You know what I'm saying? So no, you gotta divest yourself of Denny's, and you gotta put that all behind you. But we gonna let you up in the club though. But you gotta be a little bit more codified in your practicing of racism. And apparently, he ain't been that codified because he been settling suits quietly.
But see, that's what they told you in Charlottesville. The white people told you that we made all our Klansmen give up the car and give up the hoodie and stop getting tattooed with the KKK and the swastikas and to put on a police uniform or a fireman uniform
or a business suit.
You know what I'm saying? prison guard uniform. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. What they made them do, they made them switch that up so that we could digest it better. Mm-hmm. So that white folks could digest it better. You know mm-hmm. what I'm saying? Yeah. But we already know what, like I told you, everybody I know that's of sexual age, that's white, that's a male or a female, even females, like you were saying. And see, this is where people going to get in trouble. Because these little old figureheads that y'all like to call them, like Russell Simmons and black folk, what's the black congressman, these people don't represent you, but we'll go to bat for them and thinking that we, by defending them, that we're defending something of ours when ain't nothing that they got was given for the benefit of us. It was given for the benefit of the white man. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nothing Russell Simmons got or have done was to benefit anybody black. You see what I'm saying? Yeah. It's always been for us to be able to say, oh, he got it. I can be like him one day. No. You telling me that you want to be a glorified slave. You know what I'm saying? You want to be the house Negro. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm watching, what's the guy named public TV that does the Finding Your Roots? You know what I'm saying?
Henry Louis Gates.
Yeah, Henry Louis Gates. He had one of the Wayans brothers on there. And done ran their DNA and not DNA, ran their little history or whatever. And found out that their ancestors was kin to a man that where the ancestor was working for the governor of South Carolina. And at that time, the governor of South Carolina was the most powerful guy in the Union. Being as though, you know, South Carolina has one of the biggest ports in Charleston mm-hmm. on the eastern seaboard. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But anyway, he had so much power or whatever. But anyway, he was traveling all over, going to Mexico, going to Canada. Well, one day he got up to Canada, and the three black slaves kidnapped the governor's, he was the governor's driver. He drove his horse cart. You know what I'm saying? Kidnapped the slave and say, you free now. And the slave said, this is the way your brother's ancestors said. No, send me back. I had it.
Oh, man. For real? Now, I saw that one
man,
with the Wayans brothers.
This episode.
It was on television. I believe you because I saw, I think it was one of my daughters was watching it, and I said, "Who ain't that one of the Wayans brothers?" And she was like, yeah, and I watched it. And then I was like, okay. And I went back to the studio to get back to work. So I didn't see that part, but I'm going to see if they DVR'd it. But I believe it.
He not even said, send me back. When he stayed there for a couple of years, and then he went back himself.
Wow.
And told him what had happened and took his job back and died serving as governor. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
But for him to do that, for him to go back to his oppression, to his oppressors, for them to have that type of mind control, I have no, like, you know, what they say, you can't fault. Mm-hmm. I don't think God don't judge us negatively for what we do while we're being oppressed. Because you can't fault a fool for standing up there on Fox News and talking about another black man. You know what I'm saying? Or what he got to do to make it through. When they willing to get up here and talk bad about they self, about they people, you can't fault them. You know what I'm saying? You can't fault nobody like
well,
that because it's just like...
It depends,
like
Brother Mike.
Being a child.
But Brother Mike, I think we responsible for what we do as individuals. And I know the oppression is real, but are you selling out? Am I selling out? Did Malcolm X sell out? Did Huey Newton sell out?
If we wanted to stop that stuff right now, stop them from selling out, we won't have to do it. We got people out here willing to do it for us. We got a little group over there in the Middle East, one of them affiliates of one of them terrorist groups, and say, hey, y'all don't want us on Iraq. We won't even say the terrorist group. Damn them terrorists. Iraq, if you don't want... You don't want America telling you what to do for the next 50, 100 years, then this is what you do. This is all you got to do. This is all they got to do. Live here anywhere. Anywhere y'all want to be free and don't want to be oppressed by America or the Western culture, then this is what you do. Anybody that come over there, anybody that come over there that ain't your skin color or ain't your lightness, cut their head off. Anybody. I don't care if female, male, if they're humanitarian or not, cut their head off. Kill them. They get the hint so quick, you're like, well, we don't need to be up. I promise you. If just anybody show up that ain't you, that ain't your people, kill them.
I think they'll use that as an excuse to do what they've been doing, though. Brother Mike, don't you think? The wholesale bombing country.
Let me tell you why they won't.
Why?
Let me tell you why they don't. Same reason why you ain't seen them go attack another African nation. They ain't went back in no Somalia, no what. You hadn't seen them?
They went into Libya.
Those soldiers got killed the other month. Did you see them rooting up and sending troops over there to kill them?
You talking about the UN troops that was killed in the Congo, got slaughtered.
Yeah, I saw that. They're not gonna send nobody over to stop that or figure that out. They know what that's like. They said no, not them, because anybody that go over there, they don't care if you're black, white, whoever. If you ain't them, they cut your head off. Guess what happened? They get to run this place.
Hey, but I look at it like this.
They don't get much outside help, but they get to run the place.
Like these black dudes that they've been bringing on, showcasing on the local media here, the white splain and tell us what a great guy is, Jerry Richardson is, and how much he did for them and their families. Now, I'm not going to have no ill will toward them, but at the same time, I got to call out incorrect behavior. Because just as easy as they tell them little stories, they could decline the interview and say, my name ain't Jerry Richardson. I ain't see nothing. I ain't heard nothing. So you need to go talk to somebody else. That's how that would be go. And don't let them use you and say, oh, Mr. Richardson treated me with respect. He was a great guy. He was holding my hand before they put me under for surgery. And he did. He gave me his personal plane when my brother died. We, like that white dude said yesterday, we don't care. We don't want to hear all that. We know that he did what he did based off of him paying it. You know? So that's what I'm saying.
That's that pause. That's that pause. You remember when them nine people got murdered down there in Charleston?
I know he gave that money.
That first thing they put in that microphone and the people asked, what's the first question they asked? Do you forgive?
Yeah.
Do you forgive Dylan Roots? Now, these people ain't been buried yet. You know what I'm saying? The investigation ain't concluded. Or none of that. See, they just now found out he was in North Carolina and just got him arrested. And they asked him, they say, do you forgive? Just the first thing they come ask anybody black.
Yeah.
When somebody white has done something to them and they know it's just categorically wrong and you can't get around it, you can't get around it from being wrong. You know what they say?
Yeah, those people are vulnerable. They're in an emotional state. And I actually did a video on that. Like, the mother of Walter Scott said the same thing to Michael Slager. Said, I forgive you, but what you did was wrong, you know? But again, some of these black Christians are coming from the space of the Lord's Prayer, which says, forgive me of my trespasses. I forgive others of their trespasses so that I can be forgiven for mine. That's a spiritual belief that I must forgive other people's sins in order for me to be forgiven for my sins. Now, that's not something that I would be putting out there. I wouldn't be saying that. So I don't fault that mother for saying that, because she in an emotional state right there. She ain't thinking straight and what have you. And that's why I said it's unfair to be asking Ron Rivera. It's unfair to bring on these former black employees and current black employees and ask them how good Mr. If they, you know what I'm saying? It's not fair.
I thought it was your mouth. Your mouth is good too.
Yeah.
Your mouth let you work on, he let you off on Sundays, or do y'all got to work at noon on Sundays? Oh, you got the good.
No, bring that white woman out that was a cheerleader who worked her way up from cheerleader to become the CEO and send her out there and tell us how you got such a good promotion like that.
Hey, man, I know how these people play the game.
I know.
My thing is this. people out here don't understand this. They don't understand how the game goes. They're so oblivious to it because they got to survive.
You know, I understand.
Survival has taken over any type of being able to educate themselves and find out what's causing the condition that they're in currently and permanently in. You know what I'm saying? So I just pray that they can separate what you were talking about. They can separate God from the religion. You see what I'm saying? Because the two are not synonymous. You know what I'm saying? If you keep coming at it from a religious point of view and justifying your actions through a religious prism or some type of religious text, whether it's Muslim, it's Buddha, whatever text you come out with, you know what I'm saying? And you justify your life and your actions and the things that go on through others through their religion, I can guarantee you that you are doing the devil's work. You know what I'm saying?
You feel like they enabling them, enabling them or something to that effect?
Exactly. That's why I say you're doing the devil's work.
I wouldn't do it. I would never say that. But I understand, though. But like I was saying, you know, I was telling people, don't hate on that old woman. She lost a son. Okay?
You're not.
But I'm saying, and you made that distinction that I hate it. You put it on the cracker. All right, the racist cracker who putting it up in their face. But no, I was seeing black people who attacked them and say they always coming out forgiving them and this make us look bad and all. I said no, it don't make us look bad because don't no one black person speak for all of us. Don't you know that? Okay, so that's that woman, that's her beliefs, that's her spiritual beliefs, whatnot. She is the one who lost the son, and she's in grief right now. She ain't in her right mind, so save your hate for the murderous slave catcher that gunned her son down.
Hey, Scotty, have you ever worked with a black dude that was so black, and you were like, man, please don't come over here with all that blackness around these white folks right now today. You know what I'm saying? You're like, damn, boy. He don't know how to cut it off. You know what I'm saying? He don't know how to, you know, switch. Like, we all got to switch. He don't know how to switch. He's just going to be him every day, right? You're like, dang, man. And then you get that one day where that black dude come in and he let him have it. And you're like, yeah. Because they been getting on my nerves, too. I'm glad he finally let him know that I ain't had to do it. I ain't never had the courage to do it. But see, the whole time, he was right. You was the coward. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
The whole time, he was letting them know, this is where I'm at. If you come over this way, across this line with me, then this is what you're going to deal with. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You're sitting up here switching and flipping to conform. Stop trying to humanitize yourself to some inhumane people. You know what I mean? I might not have said the word right, but I know
what you're saying. Yeah. Stop trying to prove your humanity to people who don't even see you as human.
Who don't see you as a human and who are inhuman, who behave inhumanely themselves.
Right.
It ain't necessary.
But listen, Mike, I got a roll, man. We about 30-something minutes over, man. But I appreciate you calling in and chiming in with your thoughts.
Thank you for the program. Thank you.
All right. So that's one of my fellow North Carolinians right here in the South. So I just want to thank everyone who tuned in, Tag and Mike, for calling in with their questions and their insights and sharing the information with us. I will be back on air with another live program next Tuesday at 8:00 p.m. Eastern time. That's my regular time, Tuesdays at 8:00 p.m. Eastern. I also put out video podcasts on the network. Subscribe to the network, to our RSS feed on blacktalkradionetwork.com, as I will issue little short videos on a story or a subject from time to time. But guess what? There are plenty more independent black media producers who are putting out content on the network. And it's a lot of good quality content. It's no shucking and jiving. It's no talking about the dating game, unless you talk about it in the context of white supremacy in this period, current period of slavery that we live in. So, you know, it's always interesting content on blacktalkradionetwork.com. It's a very unique space, in my opinion, as we don't pull no punches. We don't bite our tongues. We ain't afraid of somebody taking our voice away because we on they platform. No, this is a digital safe space for black people. We may not always be right. We may not always be in agreement with each other. But guess what? We do have a right to safe spaces in order to speak honestly and from the heart and mind about these issues that face us on a daily basis. Tomorrow is Wednesday, so tomorrow is a very long day of broadcasting, starting at 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. Tanya Free and Friends talk show. Also, of course, Tando is on tomorrow. New Abolitionist Radio as well. And I think Mind, Body, and Spirit will be back. Hopefully, the ladies have recovered from that little illness that had them off air last week. All right, so recognize the fact that we live behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. The 13th Amendment says slavery is the law of the land. 13th Amendment did not abolish slavery. It simply changed the parameters and the conditions by which you may enslave someone. And the 13th Amendment simply made it legal for them to enslave you through the courts and on these prison plantations. That's the reason the United States has the world's largest prison plantation on the planet. On the planet. How can this be the home of the, land of the free and home of the brave? When we got so many cowards sitting around while these people practice slavery at unprecedented levels. So that's what's really going on here. And you have to be cognizant of that, and you have to be aware, and you, especially if you're black or if you're poor, you gotta learn how to do what they call defensive living so that we don't get snared and caught in these traps that the enemy has laid for us. But we also have to strategize on how we are going to eliminate this evil, wicked system still practicing slavery, and using white supremacy to justify all. With that said, peace and blessings to all. Be safe out there. Peace.